Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Every 10 minutes, a woman dies from an unsafe illegal abortion. That's 47,000 women a year. Approximately 25% of the world's population lives in countries with highly restrictive abortion laws, mostly in Latin America, Africa, and Asia. In some countries, such as Chile, women still go to prison for having an illegal abortion. An abortion is not allowed, even in cases of rape or when the pregnancy endangers the life of the woman. Rebecca Gompertz met women needlessly suffering and heard stories about women dying when she was working as a doctor on a Greenpeace ship. The captain told her that if she sailed a Dutch ship to international waters, she could take women aboard and legally help them. And that's how Women on Waves was started. Dr. Gompertz decided to build a mobile clinic and sail to international waters off the coast of countries like Ireland and Morocco, where abortion is illegal. The Women on Waves team is often met with hostility by mostly men who oppose abortion and open arms by desperate women with no options. The new documentary Vessel tells this incredible story. Women on Waves has helped women in 23 countries and is now using the internet to educate people about how to have an abortion by taking pills. In 2012, Women on Waves received emails from women living in 135 countries, including the U.S. In fact, they're getting more and more emails these days from American women. 231 abortion restrictions have been enacted in the past 4 years in the U.S., according to the Guttmacher Institute. So what is the current state of abortion access worldwide, and what happens to women who are denied abortions? Today we are joined by Diana Whitten, director and producer of Vessel. The film premiered at the South by Southwest Film Festival and won the Audience Award in the documentary competition. The film Vessel screens at the Delancey Theater here in San Francisco on February 19th, and you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Hi, Diana. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. So happy to be here.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Jody Jacobson. Jody is editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check, a news site focusing on reproductive health and justice issues. Hi, Jody. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Rose. It's great to be on with you.
Well, it's great to have you. And Diana, congratulations on this film. I watched it with a couple of girlfriends, and I was watching their interaction as we saw Dr. Gompertz and her amazing team sail into places like Morocco and Ireland who were met with complete hostility. And then we heard the cases of women who had no other options. And these friends follow the news, and they really had no idea that this is happening around the world, that so many women are dying from unsafe abortions. Do you think that this is common knowledge?
I mean, I can speak from my own experience. When I started making the film 8 years ago, I didn't know. I didn't know the state of things globally, and I certainly didn't know a lot about medical abortion. So I think that's a fairly common response here. And, you know, I think that's part of that has to do with the fact that the landscape here in the States has changed so much in the past few years. And we have seen such a concentrated attack on abortion rights here, abortion access here, that we've had to become more aware of what's going on globally and alternatives to clinical care.
So since you spent so much time with Dr. Gompertz and her team and traveled to many countries around the world, what really struck you about what women are facing today?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think my initial motivation to make this film came from a much more intellectual place. I was in an international studies graduate school program, and I was reading a lot about offshore spaces, and it's this really interesting geopolitical construct that people have been exploiting for, you know, decades for, you know, crime and personal gain. You know, you have your gambling ships and whatnot. And here was an example of someone that had found this geopolitical loophole and wanted to occupy it with a social justice agenda. And that was so, you know, intellectually interesting to me. But as I started to follow them, I became much more emotionally attached to the material, to what they do, to their work, in part because I saw how vast the need was in the places where they sailed, and also the dedication of the activists towards the work that they do, the activists of Women on Waves and Women on Web.
And Jody, what makes, I think, the film so powerful is that we hear the individual stories, and we often talk about this in the United States, that women need to tell their stories in order to let the wider public know what's really happening on the ground and how they're being affected by these restrictions.
Absolutely. I think that we have a, you know, those of us that pay attention to these things have a disproportionate level of awareness of what's going on to the general public, because I don't think people are as aware. And part of that is a result of stigma that continues to, you know, prevent lots of women from, or people who have experienced abortion, whether as a supporter or as someone who's undergone an abortion, to become public about it. It's, you know, the sort of new closeted thing is to have, to be able to talk about your abortion experience, because abortion is medical care. Many women undergo abortion, 1 in 3 in the United States, and many women worldwide, as you've already mentioned. And it's a part of reproductive health care, but in this country, we've made it into a political football, and that's the level at which people see it. They don't see it. They don't see the human issues behind it.
Well, I hope that you all can go to yourcallradio.org and take a look at some of the links, because there is a map that shows where abortion is illegal. In many cases, there are no exceptions for rape and incest. And Diana, Dr. Gompertz, Rebecca Gompertz, was working on a Greenpeace vessel. And when she was in Mexico, she met a girl who was raising her younger siblings because her mom had died during a botched legal abortion. And then when her ship traveled to Costa Rica and Panama, women told her about just how they suffered because they didn't have access to the procedure. And that's when she first started thinking about these issues, right?
Yes, that's how she tells the story, that it was her, you know, she grew up in the Netherlands, which has had easier access to abortion for, I believe longer than we have, legal access to abortion. Mm-hmm. So it was really that work that she did with Greenpeace as an onboard medic that sensitized her to the state of things globally.
And then someone told her that if you sail a Dutch ship to international waters, you could take women aboard and legally help them. And that's how the idea was born. And along with some amazing people, they built this mobile clinic and off they went. I mean, it wasn't that easy, obviously, but that's what sparked the idea.
Exactly. And it's so, to me, that's so interesting because I think historically, if you look at people who have really advanced the legalization and access to abortion, they've either done so in an illegal way or in a clandestine way. And because of this very unusual legal construct that she found, she was able to shine not, you know, just a normal visibility, but the media spotlight onto the work that she was doing while simultaneously directly helping women.
And she ran into a lot of legal issues, licensing issues. Again, she was met with outright hostility when they would sail into various countries. Can you talk a little bit about just, you know, the human side of this? Were you on the ship with her in many of these cases?
I started filming in 2007, which the film actually follows her from 2001 through 2014. So it's the full arc of their, the evolution of their organization. So what was interesting to me is that earlier footage from earlier campaigns was donated to us by filmmakers and activists that had been there to cover the early campaigns. I came in around 2007 when the ship sails to Ecuador. And by that point, you know, one of the things that the film follows is this sort of iterative structure of what it means to be, you know, a successful activist organization. And all of these antagonists that you reference that come their way, and they are, you know, bureaucratic, religious, governmental. At one point, warships are sent by the Portuguese government to prevent their ship from sailing in to the Portuguese harbor. And with every antagonist that comes their way, they really sort of, rather than run from it, incorporate it into their work and allow it to evolve their organization into something more sustainable. So I think it's a great skill to have as an activist organization.
Hmm. And since you mentioned Ecuador, Jody, your reporters have been covering what's happening in Ecuador on RH Reality Check. Let's just take one country. Talk about the law in Ecuador and what are women facing there who have abortions?
Right. So in Ecuador, abortion is illegal, period, stop. And women who have either have been suspected of having an abortion, have had a miscarriage, and therefore are suspected of having an abortion, are in fact open to being arrested in El Salvador. And there are many women who are literally in prison for either seeking an abortion or undergoing what has been suspected an abortion. In many cases, these are just miscarriages without explanation. And so what you have now is an effort in El Salvador by rights groups to call attention to the abortion law there and its, you know, the really cruel and inhumane effects of that law, which is not only to imprison women for very long times, but not to give them legal counsel, not to give them hearings, to take them away from their, you know, their children and their families. It is an extremely harsh environment. But, you know, I think it's easy for us to look at El Salvador and think, well, you know, that's not where the United States is. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the problem is we are becoming more and more like the United States. We've just seen in Indiana a woman, Purvi Patel, be indicted and then put in jail for a miscarriage. We've seen women in Wisconsin and other states of the United States being arrested for suspected abortion or suspected miscarriage, or alternatively, women who are suspected of, quote, harming their fetus in utero. So laws are being used in the United States to create the same kind of climate we see in El Salvador, where women are being imprisoned. And it's not just El Salvador. In various states of Mexico, women are imprisoned for suspected abortion. What happens in these countries is that healthcare professionals literally become an arm of the police, and they report women who then, you know, can't. These are also countries where you have extraordinarily high rates of maternal mortality because of lack of maternal health care. So women are really in a serious bind because they have no alternatives for shaping their families, for ensuring they can afford the number of children they have, and then they're apt to be stigmatized or imprisoned for trying to control their lives.
Diana, what was it like for you to be involved in this film from 2007 and travel to these countries that have very strict abortion laws? In some cases, abortion is illegal, while at the same time looking at the United States. So, for example, according to a new report, RH Reality Check just covered this. Threats against abortion providers have doubled in the U.S. since 2010. And then in the Guttmacher Institute reports that over the past 4 years, we've seen 231 abortion restrictions in the United States. So what was that experience like for you to be reporting on what's happening in these countries while at the same time seeing what's happening in the United States?
Yeah, well, you know, when I started making the film, I really thought it was going to be a foreign story. I thought it was a story that we could use as a cautionary tale. You know, it would sort of illustrate an other situation, not our situation. And you know, in one sense, Rebecca has such a fresh approach to the work, and her team. They're, you know, they always work offensively, not defensively. They're completely unapologetic about the work that they do. There's really no indulging in the stigma. I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but I learned a very different approach on an emotional level to abortion than the one that I grew up with, even amongst very liberal pro-choice, you know, in a very liberal pro-choice climate like mine, like the one I grew up in. So in that sense, my perspective, even just with vocabulary around the issue, changed a lot. But yeah, like you said, simultaneously to the production of the film, and especially over the course of our edit, which sort of, you know, came into play right around the time the 2011 Congress came into began. Yeah, we started seeing that it would be more of a local story and less of a foreign story, and a cautionary tale that unfortunately is already playing out here. We've seen that sort of play out a little bit even in screenings of the film. We always thought that we might have to, you know, consider security, for instance. Rebecca always considers security when she takes the ship into ports. And we talked a lot with the South by Southwest team when we premiered back last March, because it was Texas. And Texas has had such an extraordinary year in terms of, the year before last, had such an extraordinary year in terms of a concentrated attack on abortion rights and a mobilization of activism as a consequence of that attack. And so we were really, you know, concerned, more than worried, but concerned that there might be some kind of, you know, protest or whatnot. And what we experienced was the opposite. There was a huge upswelling of support around the film, both in audiences and with local activist groups. And it continued on that way for the majority of our festival circuit until about a month ago, when we did have our first attack in Sweden, of all places. There was three masked men that threw a smoke bomb into the theater and trapped the audience inside. It was an abortion-themed festival, So it was clearly the work of an anti-abortion group, and everyone was fine, but terrified, obviously. So, you know, things come up that you don't expect.
I want to talk more about that, but you raised something earlier that was interesting. You said that the approach and the language used by Rebecca Gompertz and the Women on Waves was different from what you've seen in the United States and the pro-choice community here. Can you elaborate on that?
I don't know if I would say it's different from the pro-choice community here, but in terms of my personal experience, it was there was a complete lack of apology about providing abortions, and if you need one or if you know whatever your situation, it was much more practical, pragmatic, direct, unapologetic. And again, their activist strategy tries to stay on the offensive instead of on the defensive, and that's very inspiring to me. And they, you know, honestly, they have fun with it. It's not that, you know, abortions aren't fun, but they sort of they have a more playful attitude towards getting around the antagonisms that come, you know, the patriarchy, basically, than what I had experienced up until meeting them.
Jody, what are your thoughts on that?
In terms of
just their approach, they're unapologetic. I mean, here in the U.S., it's, you know, Hillary Clinton said this many years ago: make abortion legal and rare. Right? Isn't
yes.
that? Yeah.
The framing was safe,
right.
Legal, and rare.
Safe, legal,
yeah.
and rare. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't really see that in the U.S., that it's unapologetic. There's always this sort of, well, it is a difficult decision, but...
Right.
Right?
Well, I think, again, we have tended to sort of project a political framing onto women. Abortion may be a difficult decision for some women and may not be for others, but these are all individual experiences, and we are trying to create some sort of overarching political narrative that, you know, that makes a politician safe rather than really focusing on the fact that women cannot be individual people with individual human rights unless they have access to a full range of reproductive health care, including access to safe abortion care. And so, you know, the whole safe, legal, rare thing was a framing that allowed a set of politicians, the Clintons at the time, to negotiate that conversation. I don't think any of these framings really work so much as to say that we just need to recognize this as a basic human rights and health issue and ensure that women have access to it, because the alternative is to turn into El Salvador or Zimbabwe or Kenya or Uganda or other places where you've got, you know, where abortion, complications of abortion, because there are no safe legal abortions, are in fact a leading cause of maternal death.
And that is Jody Jacobson. She is editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check, a news site focusing on reproductive health and justice issues. Diana Winton is director and producer of the documentary Vessel, which follows Dr. Rebecca Gompertz, who decided that she was going to provide abortions to women around the globe by building a mobile clinic and then sailing to international waters. And you can see a trailer at yourcallradio.org. If you're in San Francisco, you can see Vessel February 19th. Find more information at yourcallradio.org. And we'd love for you to join us. What are your thoughts on abortion restrictions around the globe and here in the United States? What questions do you have for Diana and Jody about how Women on Waves is traveling by sea to help women? I mean, at this point, and I'll ask Diana this in a couple minutes, they're actually also helping women online. The internet has really been a massive tool to give women information about ending a pregnancy with pills and just really giving them the information they can't get from their own governments in many places around the globe. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. What do you think about women countering anti-abortion laws in the United States? You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Diana, I was really struck by the interviews with local activists on the ground who are working under very harsh circumstances. For example, in places like Poland, when the women arrived, they were called Nazis. They had eggs thrown at them. 80 to 200,000 abortions are conducted in Poland every year. Can you talk a little bit about the local activists and just what they're dealing with and their reception to Women on Waves? or their, I should say, sure. opinion of Women on Waves?
Sure. Women on Waves goes where they're invited. So it's, you know, it's never a case of them bringing abortion to the shores of the countries that they visit. There's always local efforts on the ground that are working towards liberalizing law that invite Women on Waves to come and basically help mobilize energy towards their causes. So it's always a collaboration. And I've, you know, in my experience filming them, I've just been really struck by their bravery in these countries where it's completely illegal, where they could be, you know, often in often cases imprisoned for the work that they're doing. Some of them are very young. I mean, the women that were working in Ecuador, some of them were 19, 20 years old, and just really brave and really smart and educated about it. We had a group of providers that came from the Philippines, and it was in a training. In Thailand, actually, this very small training. And it was my assumption that they were there to learn the protocols for medical abortion. And that was an incorrect assumption on my part, because what happened was I listened to them and they knew all of the protocols. They had pieced it together from the internet and from, you know, talking to various colleagues. What they needed and what they were there for was a human connection with Rebecca, with the other activists, with another person to tell them, yes, you are doing this correctly, you are not hurting your patients. And that was a lesson for me in terms of solidarity and, you know, how people, you know, need that solidarity, especially these providers and these activists working in very clandestine, very dangerous situations in order to help women. And that's something that I hope the film will do, because it does show so many different groups around the world working with the same medical protocols.
Mm. It was also interesting to see that when the ship would enter these waters, the women on board thought, well, maybe they'd get a few phone calls, and they were bombarded with phone calls, mm-hmm. which just shows the high need.
Exactly. Their first campaign in Ireland, I think they expected maybe, you know, they just didn't know. They didn't know what would happen, and they ended up with over 300 calls in that first campaign.
Wow. We're talking today about the new documentary Vessel, and I want to play a clip, because when Women on Waves went to Ireland, they didn't have the right license. And in this clip, Dr. Rebecca Gompert is speaking at a press conference. Reporters are criticizing her for raising women's hopes and then letting them down. And you can't hear this reporter's question, but Rebecca Gompert is asked, have you ever had an abortion? Here's a clip from Vessel.
I cannot tell you how much my heart bleeds for this. The only way to change this situation is if Irish government is legalizing abortion, as every country all over the world where abortion is illegal. We can never, ever, ever provide enough services to all these women that are in such desperate needs. I don't think that's an appropriate question, because there are 45 million abortions taking place each year. There's no medical intervention that has been done more than abortion. I mean, are you going to ask somebody working for Amnesty International whether they have been tortured? Come on, that's not the issue. The issue is, do women have really a basic human right to be able to decide what is happening with their own bodies?
And that is Dr. Rebecca Gompert. She was responding to a reporter who said, have you ever had an abortion? And she said, that's not the issue. That was a pretty striking, Diana, because I'm sure she was asked this question over and over again.
And I love that response that she has there. It puts it into such great perspective. And she does get asked that question several more times in my experience with her. She comes out with her answer that she has experienced it when she's on Portuguese television, which is a really interesting moment history of reproduction.
Yeah, we're actually going to take a quick break, and I'll ask you about that, because that was a great moment in the film. And at the time, Rebecca Gompert was pregnant, and so she talked about her past experience. Today, we are talking about the new documentary Vessel. You can see the trailer at yourcallradio.org. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KANLW, a show that depends and relies on engaged listeners. To join us in today's conversation, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. 866-798-TALK. Or if you prefer to write your question or comment, you can email it to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, World Have Your Say from the BBC. All of this made possible by KALW listeners and supporters, including Hillary Forbes of Oakland.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be joined by Pulitzer Prize-winning photojournalist Lindsay Adaro. She'll be speaking about her new memoir, It's What I Do, A Photographer's Life of Love and War. She spent more than a decade documenting the human costs of war in many countries, including Iraq, Libya, and the Congo. How do images shape our views of war? That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we're talking about the new documentary, Vessel. It follows the story of Dr. Rebecca Gompertz and her team, Women on Waves. Dr. Gompertz decided to build a mobile clinic to sail to international waters and legally help women get safe abortions after she saw so many women needlessly suffering when she was a doctor on a Greenpeace ship. And today, we are joined by Diana Witten, director-producer of Vessel. You can see it February 19th in San Francisco. Find more information at yourcallradio.org. And Jody Jacobson, editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check, a news site focusing on reproductive health and justice issues. And if you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on what women are facing here in the U.S. and around the globe today? What are your thoughts on organizations trying to counter anti-abortion laws? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. And if you have any questions for Diana about what she saw on the ship, we'd love to hear from you. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Harvey in San Francisco. Hi, Harvey. Welcome to the show.
Yes. My question is if you could go into more detail about what sort of legal problems you face when you come into the port to pick up the women, and especially when you come into the port afterwards to drop them off. Do they try to prosecute those women? And, you know, obviously international waters, maybe national laws don't apply, but it's certainly not a law-free zone. You know, the U.S. Constitution gives the Congress authority to, you know, to define piracies and felonies committed on the high seas. And if you could go into more detail about that, thank you.
All right, thank you. Diana?
Sure. So the way that the construct works, and I must preface this by saying I'm not a lawyer, I'm a filmmaker, but my understanding of the international laws of the sea that they're working with is that the laws over a vessel in international waters apply based on the laws of the flagship country. So it isn't a law-free zone. Essentially, a ship that's registered in the Netherlands must answer to laws from the Netherlands. So it's essentially a floating body of isolated jurisdiction when it's in offshore waters. In the Netherlands, abortion is legal. So on the ship, in general, abortion is illegal. They do also have to adhere to certain regulations, medical licensing, and that's some of the bureaucratic setbacks that they faced when they were on their first campaign in Ireland. Outside of that, I think you're also sort of getting towards the question of privacy of these women who do join the ship, and, you know, harbors are public places for the most part often. So how is their privacy maintained? And that is something that the group does think about quite a bit. Often women aren't interested in privacy. They're making a statement and they want to be, you know, they want their faces to be seen. And that was interesting for me to experience. But when that's not the case, and there are always privacy methods put into place. For instance, whenever women come down to the harbor, there's a group of women that that come with them, and everyone wears hats and sunglasses, and then everyone goes down into the hull of the ship, and everyone changes their hats and sunglasses, and then only some people come out. So there's sort of a group effort to, you know, keep these identities, the identities of the women that are seeking help, safe. There's also been various methods put into place, like when they announced the ship is coming into the harbor, especially after Portugal, when the government stopped it from sailing in. Since Portugal, the ship will come into the harbor weeks, sometimes months before the campaign is scheduled to start. So once they make the announcement that the ship is coming in, it's already actually in. Mm-hmm. So the ships that were sent, you know, have been sent by governments to stop the ship from sailing into the harbor don't find the ship because it's already there. So there's interesting ways that they get around various bureaucratic blockades.
And also, in often cases, they're met with hostility, right? I mean, we saw in many times in the film large groups of mostly men screaming at the women. Rebecca's jumping from ship to ship. Sometimes you can't keep track of where she's going. they have to, you know, be rushed by security to another truck, for example, to be taken to a building. I mean, there's a lot of drama involved in this.
Yeah, I mean, they're threatening the system that's put in place to stop this from happening. And part of the threat is that it is legal and it is possible and it works. So that makes people angry.
The other thing that struck me was when they do dock, a lot of the local activists feel very empowered. And so they have this hotline and they spray paint it around town. They hand out flyers. I mean, there's all of this activism that just kind of explodes when the ship arrives. Can you talk a little bit about that part of it, what worked and what didn't work when Women on Waves arrives and works with the local activists?
Yes. So the one thing to remember about the ship is that it is it's not the sustainable solution in itself. The purpose of the ship is to create a spectacle that draws attention, the media's attention, to a banner that's on the ship, and that banner contains a telephone number and an email help desk. So essentially, every picture that gets into the news has that number or that website in it, and women call that number both to schedule trips to the ship, but also to just get a counselor on the phone or on an email exchange that helps talk them through how to find and take the abortion pill. So that's a huge part of what they do. So, for instance, in Ecuador, there isn't a ship. There is no ship. It actually shipwrecked on the way down to Ecuador from Costa Rica. And that didn't make it into the film, but that's why there was no ship in Ecuador. And what happens on the ground as a result is the groups have to come up with an alternate means of creating a spectacle that gets that telephone number into the news. And what they do is they identify the statue of the Virgin at El Panecillo in central Quito that you can see from all over the entire valley of the city. And it's a statue of the Madonna, and they hang the number from that statue, which is, you know, they were very aware of the statement they were making by sort of reoccupying that symbol, but also using it as a very visible place to get pictures into the media with that number.
Hmm. Well, thank you for the question, Harvey. Today, I'm joined by Diana Whitten, director and producer of the new documentary Vessel, which follows Dr. Rebecca Gompertz and her Women on Waves team. They decided to build a mobile clinic to sail to international waters and legally help women get safe abortions. Jody Jacobson is editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check, a news site focusing on reproductive health and justice issues. You can email us at yourcallradiofeedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Thanks again for calling, Harvey. Let's go to Betsy in Berkeley. Hi, Betsy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much. A wonderful show, and I wanted to be sure that people heard about a project in Texas, where we know that probably Texas, of all the states in the U.S., is the one the most draconian, the most, you know, vehemently on the attack to get rid of abortion options for women in that state. And recently, a group, organization called Fund Texas Choice has been in the news a bit with Lindsay Scheibel is the founder and director of it. She is a young woman, 21 years old, with one baby and another on the way. She's a full-time law student, and she has almost single-handedly started this Fund Texas Women project. And what they do is receive donations and build up a fund to finance women to get out of Texas to get their abortion. So airfare, hotel, travel to another state, all the things that make it possible for especially low-income women, and especially women, too, in very rural areas where even to get to a city to get a bus to a clinic is a 200-mile trip and they don't have a car. So this is a heroic effort. It's an underground railroad for low-income all women in Texas. And we're so inspired. My husband and I donated to it to the group. I'm making a music video. Actually, I'm a singer-songwriter, and I'm making a music video of a song I wrote in support of her project and the whole situation in Texas. And I just want everybody to know about it and look up Fund Texas Choice online and see what they're doing. This is just an example of how women rise up and, you know, just find a way. It's like a way out of no way. You know, we just find a way to do what has to be done. Mm. So I'm very inspired by her and by this program as well, of course.
Well, thank you. And so many women in the film pointed out that, yes, you can make abortion illegal, but that doesn't mean it's going to stop, right? And Jody, do you want to talk about this? Because in 2013, Texas was home to 44 abortion clinics. And then we had two strong laws that restricted, basically forced clinics to shut down. And now there are about 7 clinics in Texas, all in urban areas. Is that right?
Yes, there are. And in fact, increasingly, women are hundreds of miles from an available abortion facility in Texas. And we've done some work through our reporter in Texas, Andrea Grimes, to look at what the actual costs would be for a woman from one of those rural areas, say Harlingen, Texas, to get to an abortion clinic and be able to, you know, meet all the different requirements, staying overnight, getting child care, et cetera. And it's a quite expensive and time-consuming feat. And this is, in fact, the, you know, purpose of these laws. In fact, it's interesting now that laws have been passed to restrict the ways in which abortion clinics can be built and constructed, that the clinics that are now able to meet those new and medically unnecessary requirements, the anti-choice movement is now suing to stop clinics from actually being built according to the specifications the anti-choice movement put in place. So it's not about what they claim it to be about, which is safety or the needs of women. This is about taking away the fundamental rights of women to determine the future of their lives and the shape of their families. And we really, you know, we have to look at it in that respect.
Well, thank you again for sending or for letting us know about this group in Texas, Betsy. Jody, what are your thoughts on, I mean, this is kind of a big question, but Republicans now control almost half of legislatures across the country, government houses. And in the House this year, they wanted to introduce a bill that would ban abortions after 20 weeks with no exceptions for rape and incest unless the woman reported the rape to police first. And a small group of Republican women said, you know, that's going a little too far. So they decided to table it. But do you think that this year we're going to hit a time when no exceptions for rape and incest becomes the norm?
Well, the first thing I want to say is I don't like to talk about exceptions as being a, you know, sort of a lever for an acceptable abortion policy, because there is no good and no bad abortion. There is just the abortion that an individual woman needs for her own reasons. And so the whole question about exceptions makes me uncomfortable. I actually think there are deeper reasons behind why that bill failed. Of course, you know, the reporting rapes to police is another way of just signaling to women that, you know, the GOP as a party does not trust women, whether they say they've been sexually assaulted or whether they need to end a pregnancy. They don't trust women to run their own lives. That's just a part of it. So the whole reporting thing is, you know, just another in a long line of Republican, you know, foolishness around sex, sexuality, rape, et cetera. But, you know, we have to recognize people around the world, and I think we talked about this earlier, people around the world get abortions because they need them. And no law or policy is going to stop that. It's only going to make it safe or less safe. And so we have to begin to stop talking about these exceptions as though there were good and bad abortions and recognize that these are medical and personal decisions that people make. And what the GOP is doing is trying to play doctor. And they're only trying to play doctor when it comes to women's bodies. And that's a really profound thing to understand. They are replacing medical advice and medical practice with political policies and laws that are based on politics, not on medical practice.
I guess I bring up the exceptions because 8 years ago, Republican presidential hopefuls really didn't want to go there. They didn't really want to say where they stood on exceptions for rape and incest. And now they do. So,
well, you know, here's the thing. What the anti-choice movement, and it does not make any bones about this, is shooting for is to make the United States like El Salvador or like other countries where abortion is illegal for any and all reasons, even in the case of the life of the mother. And so, you know, there is an underlying fundamentalist ideology at work which says that the woman is not really a person. She is a vessel for whatever is growing inside her womb, and she should be willing and able to give up her life for that. And you know, this is something that's stated by anti-choice leaders, so it's not a secret. So the whole exceptions thing is, of course, where they're being pushed. There are tens or hundreds of millions of dollars going from different organizations into politicians' pockets to promote these laws. And that's why they are promoting them. And the movement behind them doesn't care about exceptions. That's why the GOP is going there.
And Diana, Betsy brought up the group in Texas that helps women travel, leave the state if they need to. And the New York Times had a story about 5 or 6 months ago about women who travel to Mexico to get pills, who live in the south of Texas because they don't have access. And what struck me about the film Vessel is that Women on Waves are educating women about how to get rid of, have an abortion with pills. And there's a couple different options. Can you talk a little bit about that decision, what went on behind the scenes and why they decided to go that route?
Absolutely. So when the ship was blocked from entering into the Portuguese harbor, Rebecca went on live television in Portugal as a reaction to that. And she, this was what you referenced earlier when she was pregnant herself. And she, what she did in that moment is to explain to the audience watching that there are pills that you can take over the counter, a pill called misoprostol. It's an anti-gastric ulcer medication, but this pill has been researched by the World Health Organization and is proven to induce abortion, to basically induce a mechanical miscarriage. And women themselves discovered this years ago, decades ago at this point in Brazil, when they read the counter indications on this box of misoprostol pills when it said, don't take it if you're pregnant because it would cause miscarriage. So they started to take it. It became researched, it became better known, and now it's one on the list of essential medicines for the World Health Organization. So our version of the abortion pill is a two-pill regimen. It's a combination of mifepristone and misoprostol used together. It's in the high 90s in terms of effectiveness. It's what Planned Parenthood offers. It's what other clinics offer that offer medical abortion. Half of that regimen is misoprostol alone. And in countries where the first pill is illegal and unavailable, you can take the second pill. You can find it over the counter. In many countries, you can get it without a prescription. So Rebecca went on TV in Portugal and said, here's a way for you to do this. That moment in the evolution of their organization led to the sister organization called Women on Web, which is predominantly an information help desk. So women can write to them, get information about how to find misoprostol, or when they need it, have the two-pill regimen mailed to them if they're living in a situation where it's illegal and not available in a clinic. I think one of the reasons I say that it's become a local story and is not just a foreign story is for many women, for example, in the Rio Grande Valley in Texas that don't have access to a clinic and can't travel to one for whatever reason, they are crossing the border into Mexico to get misoprostol or finding it in flea markets or finding it online. And it's not just Texas. And it's a very tricky thing to think about here because it is still an illegal situation for women to take these pills and induce abortion themselves, however it's happening. And it's happening because they don't have access to the gold standard of care.
Right.
And supposed to be protected by Roe.
And a lot of the women in the film said that they're, while they're glad to have this information, they're still doing this on their own. And what happens if they start bleeding or if they have major cramps? And according to the Women on Waves website, the risk of taking these pills is the same as when a woman has a natural miscarriage. Out of every 100 women that do medical abortions, 2 or 3 women have to go to a doctor to receive further medical care. And so can you talk a little bit about that? Because they're getting a lot, Women on Waves and Women on the Web are getting so many emails from women who want information about these pills.
It's a harm reduction model. They're dealing with women that don't have other access. And I think as research continues about these pills, but not only that, about telemedicine, which is just a wide open, super interesting area of thought and practice, I think it'll open up the possibility for these pills to be a paradigm shifter in the abortion debate. But we're a ways off just because, because the anti-choice movement knows about them too. Hmm. And a lot of the restrictions that they're placing on medical abortion, some of them completely absurd, are in recognition of the fact that this could be a game changer.
Jody, what are your thoughts on that? Are you hearing about more and more women in the U.S. Taking these pills?
Well, absolutely. I mean, again, it's the catch-22 women are being put into. First of all, medication abortion is very, very safe. And we've seen, any number of laws at the state level outlawing medication abortion. Why? Because medication abortion can be very early. It can be done very early. It's very safe, and it's less expensive. And it increases access to safe abortion care. So what has the anti-choice movement done? It's outlawed. This is another way of playing doctor, of politicians supplanting medical evidence and medical practice. So in turn, women have desperately turned to finding medication on their own. And as a result, in some places, they are endangering their freedom in doing so, not because there's, you know, something wrong with what they're doing, but because the law prevents them from exercising that right. So, for example, in Pennsylvania, you have a mom who is in jail as we speak for having tried to get access to medication abortion for her daughter. And these are personal choices. These are family issues, these are medical issues, and we are putting women in prison for trying to exercise their fundamental rights to their bodies.
That is Jody Jacobson, editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check, a news site that covers these issues. And Diana Witten is director and producer of Vessel, the new documentary that follows Dr. Rebecca Gompertz and her team as they sail to various countries where abortion is illegal to provide women with the information they need and to also express solidarity with the local activists on the ground. And you can see the film February 19th. It's in San Francisco. There's more information at yourcallradio.org. We've got a couple minutes left. If you'd like to give us a call, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. And you can email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Diana, I mentioned this earlier, but I was really struck when the women were talking about how the internet has really revolutionized all of this because information is power, and so they're able to really educate women about the tools they have. And I was struck when they said that they're seeing such an increase in emails from women in the United States.
Yep, and the Women on Waves doesn't, or Women on Web, they don't work here for a variety of reasons. One being that we still technically have Roe v. Wade, so it's still, excuse me, so sorry, it's still legal here. The other reasons are that it's the anti-choice movement in the United States is so violent and so litigious that it would threaten the work that they do elsewhere. One of the, you know, the other highly, for a number of years, a couple of years ago, one of the highest growing number of calls that they were getting was from U.S. military stationed in bases where, in countries where abortion is illegal. So that always shocks people. It shocked me when I saw that. It's a vastly growing need.
So what do they say when they're contacted by women soldiers, American soldiers?
Well, it really depends on the situation. It depends if there's a way to get them the pills outside of the base. I think every case is different.
Right.
But what they say, what I've noticed when Rebecca's been with me on this festival circuit, or even when I'm just fielding questions from mobilized audiences, people always ask, you know, how can I join the ship? How can I, you know, how can I help? How can I join them? And it's really about, I'm trying to figure out ways to harness that energy from audiences that see the film into local actions on the ground. So, for instance, that group that Betsy referenced, your caller Betsy, Fund Texas Choice, they've had 7 screenings of Vessel, I believe we're up to 7, across, hosted by Fund Texas Choice, in order to use the film as an event to draw visibility and funds to their work on the ground. So they charged tickets and they kept their proceeds from screenings of Vessel. And any group, large or small, can host these screenings. And it's exciting for me to see how they're using the event of the film as a way to mobilize people for efforts in the United States, local efforts.
Is it being shown in countries where abortion is illegal?
Yes, definitely. We're trying to target states, red states here that are under threat, and countries where abortion is illegal. We just booked another screening this morning in Belfast in Ireland. But all of our screenings are on our website at vesselthefilm.com. There's a list of all the screenings coming up, and they've been global. I think we're about at 110 screenings.
Oh, wow.
Booked.
You talked a little bit about mobilization. Jody, do you want to jump in on that one? Because, you know, people do, when they see the film, they do get activated. The friends that I was with said, what can we do besides donate to some of these, you know, groups that are helping women in the U.S.?
Well, I think it's critically important to donate to groups that are helping women get access to abortion care, and there are many funds throughout the United States doing that. But I think it's equally important to make sure that whatever state you're in, that you are protesting, making your voice heard among your legislatures, and also making sure that your governor and your senator and your congressperson know your position. Because, you know, you mentioned a couple times, Rose, the whole, you know, the fact or that we have Roe v. Wade here. But in fact, for an increasing share of women in this country, Roe v. Wade is irrelevant because they may have a nominal right under the Constitution currently to have access to an abortion, but they don't have access to abortion care. So it doesn't matter if we have Roe v. Wade, and that's sort of the disjuncture that the anti-choice movement has played on. The United States and, you know, Americans always say, well, we don't want to overturn Roe v. Wade. Well, it's kind of like voting rights. You can have, you know, nominally voting rights, but if where you vote, you don't have access to a poll or you can't get registered because people are preventing you, then you don't have voting rights. So we're looking at a situation where people really have to get active in a different way.
And Jody, we've got about 30 seconds left. I recently read that Republicans in D.C. are going to introduce a bill that would require ultrasounds before abortions. We're seeing this across the country, but they want to make this federal law. What else are we expecting?
Well, we know that they're thinking about a so-called race and gender discrimination bill. You know, again, making up their own bugaboo about sex-selective abortions or race-selective abortions. I think we'll see any number of these kinds of things, but I think also as the national folks get a little bit shy because they want to run for higher office, we'll see more and more at the states as we are seeing with 20-week abortion bans and other things like that.
Jody Jacobson is editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check. Diana Whitten is producer of the new documentary Vessel. Find more information about the February 19th screening in San Francisco at yourcallradio.org. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you so much, Rose.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll have a conversation with Pulitzer Prize-winning photojournalist Lindsay Addario about her memoir, It's What I Do, A Photographer's Life of Love and War. She spent more than a decade documenting the human costs of war in many countries, including Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, and the Congo. So how do images shape our views of war? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Nock Nguyen produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.